You're reserving three?
Yes, Your Honor.
I'll let you know. Start running into it.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court. Two errors of claim construction made below require the judgment be vacated here. First, the district court erred in construing the disposed within claim limitation to require the test strips be disposed entirely within the flow control channel, thereby excluding the preferred embodiment of the patent. The claims use nearly identical language as the specification. As the specification, when it's referring to the preferred embodiment of figure three, disposed within the claims, the assay test strip is disposed within the flow control channel. In the specification in column five, referring to figure three, the assay sample fluid control in this embodiment of the invention is accomplished by disposing assay test strip 22 within a flow control channel. There's no reason to-
with your strongest evidence, for sure, that that language in the specification is the strongest evidence to support you on claim construction. But what about the plain claim language? And the plain claim language saying, for example, that the fluid has to contact the loading zone at the at a particular location, at the, I guess, the pervious side of the flow control channel.
At the liquid pervious side. Yeah. Yes. And that would be met whether the claim, whether the test strip protrudes or whether it's flush with. In either case, it's going to contact at the opening or the liquid pervious side.
Your view is that the claim doesn't say only at the liquid
doesn't
pervious
say
side.
Only at.
So do I understand correctly that when you flip this thing over, you flip it over, and if the loading zone is protruding out, it will immediately be contacted by the liquid when it's flipped over, right? Because it's sitting outside of the channel.
Yes, and in fact, the figures are a little
There is no figure eight in the patent, even
there's,
though it says
a figure,
one,
there's
right?
a figure three, which okay. shows the flow control channels and the test strips disposed within with the test strips protruding. Now, that is shown with the test strips sticking up. But in the embodiment that's claimed, which is shown finally in figure six, that figure three is turned over. So the flow control channels are disposed with their opening toward the base per the claim.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So
you're saying figure six is flipped over?
In figure six, what you see in figure three is flipped over. So the test strips, the flow controls or channels are in the container such that their opened end is oriented toward the base.
Good dumb question. I thought that the specification said that you would take the whole container and flip it over, meaning that that top 45 should be on the bottom if it's flipped over.
That's the embodiment of figure seven.
Okay.
And with at the very end of the prosecution history, the examiner and examiner's amendment limited the claims to only the embodiment of figure six. So in figure seven, yes, figure three would be placed within the container as here, uh-huh. with the test strip sticking up. The sample would be added, and then a user would quickly turn it over, and it would be like figure six, function like figure six.
So where's the loading zone in figure six? It's down there at the bottom?
Yes.
Okay.
And it's shown as sort of the crosshatched in figure three. It's at the opening of the liquid pervious side. And so whether the tester protrudes or it's flush with, it's going to contact at the liquid pervious side. And in fact, when that, at a point during the prosecution, most of the prosecution, the claim said the test strip is disposed so that the test strip is either flush with or protrudes from. And later in the prosecution, that limitation is removed, making the claims only broader in that respect. And this term, contact at the liquid pervious side, is added to make the claims read properly. At the same time that amendment was made, the applicants stated in their remarks that the device of the present invention is shown in figures 3 through 7. So completely inconsistent with some amendment that would exclude the preferred embodiment of figures 3 through 7.
Page A11615, there's some language that says it's contrasting, of course, the tidings preferred. And it says, in contrast, the present invention provides a physical channel whereby the fluid may enter the channel to directly the contact the test strip only through the liquid pervious side. What about that language only? There's one other location. It's also at page 11651. You have the language only in describing to the patent office how your invention operates. Well, how do you respond to that? Why doesn't that show that your invention should be limited to strips that don't protrude?
The claims are open-ended comprising, and the sample will be delivered to the sample loading zone by entry through. Whether it contacts it before or not, the sample will still be delivered to the test strip by entry through that open
end. You're saying that's the only way the fluid can enter the channel, yes, even if the loading, yes, zone gets, yes, fluid otherwise.
Okay. Yes, and this language of the sample is delivered directly to the sample loading zone of the assay test strip through a liquid pervious side was mentioned also during the prosecution history when the claims recited a test strip that was either flush with or protrudes from. Mm-hmm. So the applicant is using that same language during prosecution when it could have been either. Then that limitation is removed. Claim can only get broader from that. And repeatedly during prosecution, the applicant said the device of the present invention is shown in figures 3 through 7. The district court never acknowledged that statement in coming to its conclusion. The district court never acknowledged that a disclaimer or disavowal must be clear and unmistakable.
I understand that you're right, that a disclaimer or disavowal must be clear and unmistakable, but is that really the standard that we would look to? So if we're looking through intrinsic evidence to try to determine the meaning of a claim term. So you look at the plain claim language, you look at the spec, you look at the prosecution history, and your position is that when the court looks at the prosecution history, it can only rely on it if there's a clear disclaimer? Is that your position?
Well, the plain and ordinary meaning controls, unless there's lexicography or a disclaimer. And when we look at the specification, the plain and ordinary meaning per the specification, disposed within, would encompass something that protrudes.
So you're saying to weigh against that strong evidence in the specification that it would have to be pretty
a disclaimer.
Clear.
I think to find a disclaimer.
Do you have any cases that actually say that?
I mean, I think the cases are legion to say that the plain and ordinary meaning of claim language controls, except if there's lexicography or a clear and unmistakable disclaimer.
Now, I think your opposing counsel would say plain and ordinary meaning of the plain claim language isn't just entirely disposed within the channel. It's entirely disposed within the channel so that there's some other language that says so that the liquid comes through, enters the channel at a particular location. They rely on other language to take the position that the plain and ordinary meaning is not just limited to disposed within the channel, correct?
They rely upon contact at the opening, mm-hmm, which would be met whether the test strip protrudes or not, mm-hmm, and they delivery through, they also rely upon. Okay. And the applicants consistently stated that delivery through occurred even when the claims called for the test strip being either flush with or protruding therefrom. I mean,
Can I ask you some, do you have more points you want to make about this claim term? I do want to ask you some questions about equalized pressure or equivalent pressure.
Well, no, I turn to equalized.
One of the things that concerns me about the equivalent pressure argument is that in the prosecution history, repeatedly there's reference to the invention working because the pressure is equalized. What does equalized mean?
Well, that's also in the context of the specification using only the word equilibrium in describing this concept of pressure equilibrium within and without the flow control channel. So I think there's six different instances where the specification uses the term equilibrium. The specification does refer to equalized pressure, but it also refers to equilibrium. And if I could, for example, point the court to page 11672 of the prosecution history. And I think that is particularly instructive. On 11672, in the same paragraph, the applicant uses the term equivalent and pressure equilibrium to describe the concept of the ambient pressure being used to prevent excess sample fluid from flooding the test strip. And so we have the specification consistently using equilibrium.
Well, you say consistently, but I can point out like five or six places where you say equalized pressure. So at page 11614, you say the invention utilized equalized pressure within and without the flow control chamber to prevent assay sample fluid from flooding the chamber. And then at page 11615, we have, again, equalized pressure.
Would you draw a distinction between equal and equalized? Because your other side seems to say it has to be exactly equal. That's their argument.
Right.
And to me, equalized is a verb.
Equalized refers more to a balance. The claims use the word equivalent, not equal. I mean, we were prepared to go to trial on the plain and ordinary meaning of equivalent, which has a common understanding that encompasses different things that may be different but have the same effect. So, for example, the doctrine of equivalence. Equivalent, we were going to trial with the plain and ordinary meaning of equivalent when the district court announced, well, I don't know why I don't just define it as equal.
Just so you know, you're in your rebuttal.
Thank you. And so we briefed the issue, and then the district court ultimately concluded equivalent means equal, full stop, and instructed the jury that way, and told the jury twice that you must follow the instructions. Now, we asked, as an alternative, we said, well, if you're going to go to these dictionaries and define equivalent as simply equal, well, let's look at the dictionaries where it say it's equal to or has the same effect as, which is also supported by the dictionaries that the appellees cite. And the district court rejected that alternative as well, and then followed through with an instruction that changing equivalent to equal to, full stop, nothing more.
I have another question for you, which is the patent refers to repeatedly no pressure gradient, having no pressure gradient, right? And also, I think there's something in the claim to that effect, not that exact words. What does that mean?
Eliminating a pressure gradient that would cause excess sample to flow into the channel and flood the test strip.
So it doesn't mean your view is no pressure gradient doesn't mean that the difference in pressure is zero.
It's an elimination of a pressure gradient that's going to cause flooding. Anyway, it's a basic concept that if you have a cup of water, there's a gradient of pressure as you go down. The pressure gets deeper. Someone goes in a pool, the pressure gets deeper as you go. So there is a pressure gradient in just a container of fluid. But the pressure gradient that the claims is talking about eliminating is a pressure gradient that's going to cause flooding of the test strip.
This, you're relying on the language, eliminating a pressure gradient along which excess sample fluid could flow.
Yes.
So again, your answer is no, that doesn't mean it has to be zero difference in pressure. Pressure gradient has a different meaning. I'm asking because I didn't really see anything in the record that told me what a pressure gradient is.
It's a pressure gradient that's going to cause flow of fluid, excess sample fluid. And so we submit that the district court erred by just simply changing equivalent to equal to, which required some sort of mathematical precision to the prejudice of Rembrandt. If there's no further questions, I'll preserve whatever I might have left.
Okay. I'll let you have 2 minutes. We ate it. Okay. I'll let you have 2 minutes on rebuttal.
Thank you, Joshua.
Thank you, Judge Wallach, and may it please the court. Jason Wilcox on behalf of Alere. To answer your question, Judge Stoll, about whether the prosecution is only relevant if there is a disavowal, I think the case that you're looking for, which we cite in our briefs, is Aventis. That's 715 F3rd at 1373. And it makes clear that the prosecution history is relevant for providing the context for the claim so that you can understand what the ordinary meaning is to a person of skill in the art. So we don't have to win on disclaimer here for the prosecution history to be relevant, although we do think that there was a clear and unmistakable disclaimer by removing the protrudes from language from the claim. But let me start with the plain language.
Let me start with some questions.
Okay.
Thank you. On page 45 of the blue brief, Rembrandt says, there's no debate that the preferred embodiment shown in the patent figures includes protruding test strips. Do you dispute that?
No, I agree that the embodiments in figures 3 through 7 show protruding test strips.
Okay. On page 21 of the red brief, you say, quote, flippantly dismissing the need for such measurements, Rembrandt's expert asked, why would I want to measure pressure? Why is that flippant?
Well, I think in the context of what he is saying, he is being flippant. He's responding to our expert testimony. Our expert has measured the pressures inside the and outside the flow control channel. It's explained why those are important and why it shows that there is not equivalent pressures here, but instead different pressures that do create a pressure gradient. And his response is, well, why would I want to measure pressure? Well, you'd want to measure pressure to know whether the pressures are equivalent, whether the pressures are in equilibrium with each other, and whether the pressures are equal to each other.
On page 23 of the red brief, you say, due to its design, the I-cup would not function properly with equal pressures. It requires different pressures. Where's that shown?
So I think that's shown at several places, Your Honor. Our expert testified at Appendix 10976 to 10977 that the I-cup requires that. He said the same thing at 10969 to 10970. His entire testimony was the I-cup needs a pressure gradient, and it needs different pressures, and that the reason why you don't get flooding is because there's a greater pressure inside the flow control channel than outside the flow control channel that stops the fluid from flowing between the outside and the inside.
If they're equalized, is there a greater pressure?
If they are equalized, there isn't a greater pressure. If they're equalized, there is no pressure gradient there, and the pressures are the same as the district court recognized in its construction. That's what equalized means, is the dictionaries we cite, Judge Wallach, and also the case.
There's a difference between equal and equalized, is there not?
I agree that they are different words. They share the same root, and if you look at the dictionaries that we cite, they define equalize as to meaning equal in value, equal in force. So while one is a verb and one is, I think, a noun, they have the same meaning, as the district court recognized and as courts have recognized, including the Tris pharmaceutical case that we cite and the Bullard versus General Electric case that we cite in our briefs. And, you know, the 3 or 4 dictionaries that we also cite in our briefs all treat equivalent as a synonym for equal. And the applicants themselves, if you look at Appendix 11, 6, 11.
Lots of questions. I know my brethren and sistren do too. So
okay.
Don't run on too much. On page 35 of the red brief, You say that the fluid would instead enter the strip through the protruding portion of the sample loading zone. You didn't cite anything to support that. What's your record evidence?
Well, I think you're right. We don't cite anything to say that because this is ultimately claim construction, Judge Wallach, but I think it stands to reason. If you have a protruding strip that sticks, when you have this flipped over, as my friend on the other side said, so that it's actually pointing down, the protruding strips are at the bottom. So if you have a protruding strip, the first place it's going to contact the liquid that's inside the cup is at that protrusion.
Okay, let me get to what bothers me a lot, and that is, in the yellow brief, Rembrandt says, finally, it's worth noting that Allaire states, quote, and they're citing page 39, yours, it is unclear whether applicants even recognize their amendments would exclude their preferred embodiment from the scope of the claims. Okay. And they say then, of course applicants did not recognize any exclusion in their preferred embodiment. They consistently said the opposite. And then they go on to say, hey, that's not a disclaimer in any case. And it seems to me that's a huge hole in your argument. How do you deal with that?
Well, I think that we deal with that in two ways, Judge Wallach. I think the first way is they say that figures 3 through 7 displays the invention in three places. Two of those happen before they remove the protruding language. The third place where they say it is at appendix 11671, that is after the examiners rejected the claims twice. And they're trying to explain to the examiner why they can still, quote, traverse his rejection, why they think his rejection is wrong. But then on the very next page, 11672, they say that they're nonetheless going to amend the claims to expedite prosecution. And then they make the amendment that removes the protruding strips.
It also removed flush strips, right?
It also removed flush from the strips.
So would you take the position that this invention doesn't include flush strips?
So I wouldn't, Judge Stoll. And the reason why I wouldn't say that, I agree it's a fair question. The reason why I wouldn't say that is because the language that's there, which says that the strip is disposed within the flow control channel so that the sample fluid contacts the loading zone at the liquid pervious side of the channel, means that it is flush. That's what the word at is doing in that language. So it still covers the flush version of the claims. It just doesn't cover the protruding version of the claims. And the reason why they made that change, once again, if you look at appendix 11672, is they wanted to emphasize that the fluid comes into direct contact with the sample fluid without going through any intermediate structure.
Like a wicking material.
Like a wicking material, yes.
As in tidings.
As in tidings. But the examiner also recognized that 11634, that tidings itself, as the claims were originally written, and under Rembrandt's current reading of the claims, also allows for this contact at the sample loading zone. And because the claims, as Rembrandt says, aren't our comprising claims, if you take their reading, the exact rejection the examiner gave at 11634 would still apply. His argument was, I understand that you think there's this wicking material and it's different, but if you fill the tidings device up enough, it will still come into direct contact without that wicking material because tidings has protruding strips.
I think Judge Wallach has a few more questions.
Okay.
On page 37 of the red brief, you say that contact, quote, contact cannot occur in the channel if the test strip and its sample loading zone extend outside the channel. You don't provide any citation for that assertion. What evidence in the record supports that statement?
I think it's the same explanation I gave a minute ago, Judge Wallach, which is that when you have the cup with the test strip sticking down and protruding out, where they're going to contact the sample loading zone is at protrusion. They're not going to contact the sample loading zone at the liquid pervious side, and they're not going to be delivered to the sample loading zone at the liquid pervious side.
What's the liquid pervious side?
The liquid pervious side is... So in figure 6, it would be the bottom. It is an opening in the flow control channel that is where liquid can come into the flow control channel, whereas the other sides are liquid impervious because they're generally made of plastic.
Right.
So where it will contact the sample loading zone, if you have a protruding strip, will be outside of that liquid pervious end because it will
stick. Why would it be in both places?
Well, so I think it could be in both places, but I think when you look at the prosecution history...
You said it would be in both places?
I think that for contacts, I think that it would be possible to potentially read that claim that way if there wasn't the prosecution history where they are making these amendments. But I think even stronger...
But your friend says that they're broadening, not narrowing.
Well, I think that when you're making amendments in response to three prior art rejections, it's very unlikely that you are broadening the scope of your claims to overcome
prior
art.
But it could be broadening it in context that's different than tidings, right? Well, it could be that they narrowed the claim to distinguish tidings in a particular way that doesn't even have any relevance to the infringement issue here in this case, right?
That is possible, but I think that when you combine it with their statement at 11.672, where they say the reason they're making the amendment is to expedite prosecution.
Right, to expedite prosecution, to make it clear that they're not having a capillary action of having the fluid go up the wicking sample, the wicking material, right?
Well, but if you're broadening the claims, you're not expediting prosecution. Even if you're just broadening a single limitation, you're not expediting prosecution because now you've opened up more prior art the examiner is going to have to search for. But I also think that this court has said in cases such as Norian and such as the U-Ship case that the fact that...
Do you think that all your statement you made about how people prosecute patents? Do you think you think that's how it always is? That's a routine rule everyone follows. Don't ever broaden your claims, or you open up the prior art that the examiner has to consider.
I don't think that that's a rule that applies across the board in every case.
I don't know that I could fairly import that into any patent prosecution history that I'm reviewing.
Well, but
I
think
it doesn't seem fair.
I think you can import it when they say at 11.672. That they are trying to expedite prosecution. If they didn't say that, I think that it would be hard to draw that generalization, but where they make that specific statement.
Well, shouldn't we really be looking at the language where in the flow control channel, you know, the language about dispose within the flow control channel so the sample fluid contacts the sample loading zone at a liquid pervious side of the flow control channel? That's really what we should be focusing on, that language and what it means, right?
Well, I agree. You should be focusing on that language and what
Instead
it means.
Instead of really focusing on what language they removed, which in this case, because they removed both flush and protruding from.
Well, I disagree a little bit, Judge Stoll, because I think that that sheds light on what that language that is now in the claims means. The prosecution history sheds light on that. And I think that where they had the protrudes from language in there, which tidings also has protruding strips, and then they chose to take it out after multiple prior art rejections, including a prior art rejection at 11.634, where the examiner said that just having an intermediate structure or getting rid of an intermediate structure is not enough because tidings can also deliver the fluid without using an intermediate structure, that language is telling. I'm not aware of a case from this court where someone has removed language from a claim and replaced it with different language, and the court has said that that didn't affect the scope of the claims. You know, this court has said in cases like Ajinomoto that when the words change, this court presumes that that changes the scope of the claims. And this court has also said in cases like Norian and U-Ship that even if you think that the disclaimer wasn't necessary to overcome the prior art, this court is... There's no principle of patent law that the disclaimer is limited to the amendments that they had to absolutely make to overcome the prior art.
Okay, I understand your position. Thank you.
Okay. If there are any questions about the equivalent...
I think that Judge Wallach has more questions.
I do, okay. As a matter of fact, yes. On page 7 of the yellow brief, Rembrandt says that you assert, and that's it, your assertion is at page 14 of the red brief, quote, the applicants emphasized throughout prosecution of the 019 patent that protecting against oversaturation by placing the strips entirely within the flow channel was a key point of novelty of the prior art. Rembrandt says that statement is, quote, false and supported by no record site. Where exactly in the record did Rembrandt make the emphasized statements you allege?
Well, so I think that where you would find that is appendix 11.686, where they say the claims as amended, and this is with removing the protruding strips language, the claims as amended make clear that the invention approves upon prior devices by preventing the flooding of test strips, by constructing a flow control channel around the strips, and then goes on to say in the next sentence that in this respect, the pervious side of the channel will limit the rate at which sample will flow into the channel to contact the sample loading zone. Now, by constructing it around the strips so it limits the flow into the channel to contact the sample loading zone, I think that that is what they are saying, Judge Wallach. But once again, even if you don't think that that's directly on point, I think the very fact that they removed the language from the claims is enough under Norian and U-Ship in this court's cases. I want to make one quick point on equivalent to, unless you have other questions about
this. Lots of other questions, actually, yeah.
Okay.
On page 39 of the red brief, you make the argument that it is unclear whether the applicants even recognized their amendments would exclude the device shown in figures 3 to 7. And that's the same question I asked before, in effect. How can you argue there's a clear and unmistakable disclaimer if it's unclear?
Well, I think that it's clear and unmistakable that they removed protruding test strips. Whether they recognize that that would exclude figures 3 through 7, I don't know whether they recognize that or not. But what I would know is that when they removed protruding test strips from the claim, that was a clear and unmistakable disclaimer. And that ultimately, disclaimer and the construction of the claim is objective, not subjective, based on what they...
Okay, let me ask you a housekeeping question.
Okay.
Page 1 of the gray brief, you say, if this court remands for a new trial on infringement, it should also order a new trial on invalidity. Did you ask the district court for a new trial on invalidity?
We didn't ask the district court for a new trial on invalidity because we had won and we didn't need to. And this court's cases haven't required you to move for a new trial if you're only asking for a conditional new trial if a claim construction that you've already adopted is overturned. If I could just make the one point I wanted to make about equivalent versus equilibrium.
I'll give you 30 seconds. Okay. Go ahead.
My opponent on the other side draws a distinction between equilibrium and equivalent and equal. But if you look at Appendix 11686 and Appendix 11611, the claims themselves use equilibrium and equalizer as interchangeable terms. What they say is that the inside and outside pressure stays in substantial equilibrium and, quote, in this respect, the liquid pervious side of the channel serves as a pressure equalizer. And that's because the definition of equilibrium is equally balanced. So whether it's equilibrium, whether it's equivalent to, or whether it's equal, the claims require exactly what the district court said. If there are no further questions, thank you, Your Honors.
Well, your time's up. Yeah. Step two.
Thank you, Your Honor. I just wanted to clarify a point because of the beginning of my friend's argument. They talked about the prosecution history being relevant. I wasn't suggesting in any way that the prosecution history was not relevant. I was just saying that if we're going to find a disclaimer of the plain and ordinary meaning of the language, a disclaimer of the preferred embodiment, you're going to have to find a clear and unmistakable disclaimer in the prosecution history. Now, with respect to the test strips being disposed within the flow control channel, the claims call for the sample fluid contacting it at the opening. And that it's that contact at the opening that allows the flow control channel to function as a flow control channel. The liquid closes off the opening, and it prevents further entry of fluid except by capillary action up the test strip. So controlled entry of fluid that is going to allow the test to run. Now, with respect to the amendment to remove flush with or protrudes from, that did change the claim language. When those requirements were in, there could be two ways the test strip was disposed within the flow control channel. It would have to be either flush with or protrudes from. By removing those, it's only broadened the term disposed within the flow control channel. Now,
what else could it be? It could protrude, it could be within. What's another way?
If it would contact, but it wouldn't be exactly flush with. So there was flush with and protrudes were the two options. They were removed. It was simply disposed within so that it contacts at the opening.
What if the test strip was a little bit shorter?
Yeah, I guess.
That would be the only thing that I could imagine would be if it didn't actually... It was shorter, but I guess it wouldn't matter when you flip the cup over or facing down.
And if the pressure allowed the fluid to enter enough to contact it and close it off and operate as a flow control channel. And consistently throughout the prosecution history, Tidings was distinguished based upon flow control channel and the lack of intermediate structure, not about protruding test strips. And if I can make one point on equalize.
I'll give you 15 seconds. Go ahead.
We cite on the yellow brief at page 22, a dictionary of equalize, which refers to equilibrium, our proposed construction. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. This matter will stand submitted.